Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, Today's episode is with actor Joey Phillips. And it's wonderful, wonderful. It curves away from music chats. We talk about the Lake District and we talk a little bit about wild swimming. And he's an absolutely delightful human, and you're going to love him. And we obviously talk about his acting career and some of the amazing things that he's done and he's currently doing. You know how this podcast works. It's all the good stuff and all peppered with amazing records, which you get plenty of today. Before we get rolling on Joey's chat, some thank yous. Big thanks to the team at the Blue Murder Club podcast who produced this. Go check their podcast out. It's an amazing true crime podcast. And the team there polish this podcast and make it sound super nice for your ears. A big thank you to Scroobius Pip and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network, home of so many amazing podcasts. I feel very privileged to be part of that gang. So go check it out. And there's some amazing natters available over there from Mr. Scroobius Pip himself, the Podfather. Go check out the amazing film through Buried with Brett Goldstein. I don't know how Brett's got time to do a podcast now, what with, you know, winning Emmys and just being an absolute superstar and getting a hangout on Sesame Street. But he still manages to put out an incredible podcast. So go check out Films to be Buried With. And there's so many other amazing pods over on the Distraction Pieces Network. Big love and thanks to the listeners. You lot, that is. Thank you massively. We're fast approaching 500 episodes and... yeah, I've been putting out two a week for a long time now, and the numbers and the listeners keep growing and growing and growing. So huge thanks for all of your support, you smashing people. If you would like to support the podcast and get even more good stuff, then let me tell you what you can do. You can support us on Patreon. So Patreon's like a little, it's like another little sort of social media feed, really. But basically you just... you head over to patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack and it's going to cost you $1 a month. So that's about 75p a month. And each week you will get to watch all the episodes. I put all the videos up over there. So you can, if you like to watch your podcast, you can do that. You get access to hundreds and hundreds of never released shows and radio shows and playlists. So you can go and get stuck into all of that. And also, you get invited to my monthly live show, which is, honestly, it's so good. And it's not because of me, obviously. It's because the people that turn up are all really kind people that... well, what we do is we pick a question from the podcast or the last one we done, we was like, what was your first concert and what's been your favourite concert? And we just chat for an hour on Zoom. Some people don't even have their cameras on or their mics on. They just come and listening or watching, but a load of the Patreons also like to get involved, and we have a lovely chat, and it's not a too cool for school thing, it's not a judgy thing, we talk about some absolutely ridiculously embarrassing records, but it's just a really nice gang of people, and I'd love you to come along and get involved. So you can find out about that, and everything else to do with this podcast on the website, which is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. And that's beat and, it's not beaten, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. And the links are all in the show notes from wherever you get your podcast. So just click them and head over to Patreon. Just have a little look. Just sign up for a month and then cancel it at the end of the month. But in that month, just literally smash the back catalogue. But you won't, you'll stick about because it's good, trust me. Right, I think I've done all the hard sells. We can get on to the great stuff now. Please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beaten Track podcast with the delightful Joey Phillips.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Ian Phillips, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Where are you today?
Just in my flat, mate. Just chilling out in Dartford.
Dartford?
Dartford, I know. Essentially Kent.
I mean, you're literally a stone's throw from me, mate.
Like, oh, really? Where are you?
I'm Thurrock. So I'm just
oh, no way!
Just over the bridge, mate.
Oh, so nice. I'll meet you at the retail park,
Let's
mate.
Do it, mate. Wonderful. Well, look, let's just kick things straight off and get your playlist started, and then we can have a right old natter as the pod unfolds.
Nice.
Tell me the song that you think has the greatest ever intro, please.
So I've picked this for a couple of reasons. I've gone with Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, I think the guitar riff is so iconic. As soon as that comes in, everyone knows it. And everyone, I feel like no matter where you are, if you're like at a party or on a road trip or something, and that comes on, you just kind of get possessed by like the spirit of a rock god. And everyone just seems they can belt it out of the top of their lungs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think even if that's not your like go-to genre of music, like I wouldn't necessarily say like rock is my big thing, but I think no matter who you are, I think you just can't kind of escape the power of that of that song, and especially the intro, the way it builds and the drums come in, and it's almost like a minute long, which I feel like you don't really get with sort of modern songs.
No.
I think it's just it just like really amps you up and just feels like you're on stage somewhere, and I love it. But yeah, the other reason is because, so my dad has three different ringtones, one for me, one for my mum, one for my sister. And Sweet Child of Mine is his ringtone for my sister. So anytime I hear that now, I just think of like my family.
What's your ringtone?
So my ringtone is Beautiful Boy, John Lennon.
Oh, mate. What a dad. Yeah. That's lovely.
I know. So sweet. And like John Lennon wrote it about his son and stuff. So it's very, very sweet. And the one for my mum is also very sweet. It's a bit of a rogue choice. It's a Scouting for Girls song called Millionaire.
I know.
But it's like the lyrics sort of say like, what is it? Like we could be broke and I couldn't care because I've got everything with you standing right there. Like when I laid eyes on you, I was like the richest man in the world, basically.
Oh, mate, how romantic is your old man?
I know. He has his moments. He does have his moments.
Oh, I love that. Do you know what, Joe? Normally when I speak to musicians, I'm always intrigued as to, and I talk about what you just touched on there, where, you know, the kind of the intro is becoming something that's getting lost now because everything is so fast moving with TikTok and Spotify and things like that, getting on these playlists. So all these songs are these sort of almost sort of scientifically put together little sort of TikTok friendly earworms. And I guess that's to be heard, and so I'm going to kind of move it into your domain a little bit and tell me, like, is there, because I've interviewed many actors on here and I've never really asked this question to any of them, so I'll start with you. And when you sort of go for a casting or an audition and you walk in the room, is there anything that you can do before you even do anything that you think can give you a kind of, you know, is there anything in the way that you carry yourself when you walk in the room? Is there a confidence to it? You know, do you have to be mindful how you play it? Like,
I think you do. And I think it is a little bit sort of fake it till you make it as well, because I think, you know, I think everyone experiences nerves at some level. And I think always when you're going in for a meeting, there is that sense of nervousness and them, there's a slight sort of barrier between you and the casting and whoever, and it depends, I guess, you know, obviously if you're where you are in your career. I mean, I think if you put too much pressure on something and you're desperate to get a job or it's something that you really want, you can almost do too much work on it and the nerves take over a little bit. And I think in the room there becomes a sense of sort of desperation, and which I think unnerves the casting directors and stuff. I think the difference when you're auditioning for a play, often you get to have a sort of chat with the team, whoever you're meeting. And that's quite nice, just to sort of calm whatever sort of anxieties or adrenaline that you have. Whereas with screen, it's a little bit more kind of getting straight into it. So I think you just have to find a way of being able to just keep a lid on those nerves a little bit and try and show that you're confident and at ease, I think, because then that puts the panel at ease as well. And it's just creates a easier sort of environment, I think.
I'm always intrigued as well when I speak to actors that find themselves amongst, you know, huge casts and that. And, and I've had this conversation with multiple sort of musicians as well. What's your relationship with imposter syndrome?
Oh, mate, I mean, I was literally just talking about this the other day. I think I definitely have it. I feel like most actors do have it. Some are better at covering it than others. But I was just speaking to my mate about this the other day. I think it's very easy to fall into the trap of imposter syndrome. And especially with acting, you know, it's so up and down. You might have stretches of months and months out of work, and then you feel like you're going into something. You have to kind of prove yourself each and every time. But I've said, like, what I'm trying to do now is change my way of thinking. Rather than having like an imposter syndrome, like, oh, I shouldn't be here, I don't know what I'm doing, like, I'm like shit, do you know what I mean? I think that's very easy to fall into, and I definitely do. But I think take it as a chance to be like, well, if I'm feeling like that, that's because I'm surrounded by amazing people. Like, the crew are so talented, at the top of their game. The actors are amazing. So you can only use that as a positive thing. And I can now learn from all these people. And it's like, it very much is a craft, and you're always picking up little tidbits from like a DOP or an actor or anything like that. And I think it's just it's a great way to see it as a learning experience, rather than turning it in on yourself. Like, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you've got the part. That someone's seen something in you, which means that you should be there. And I think it's just a great opportunity to work and grow as an actor and work as an ensemble with everyone that you're working with.
Absolutely. And I think, like, if you sort of, you know, walk onto a stage or walk onto a set with zero imposter syndrome or, you know, nerves or anxiety, that would be quite mad, wouldn't it?
I think so. I think there definitely are actors out there that are mad and kind of do have that confidence, which could be a good thing or a bad thing. But I think there always has to be an element of nerves and anticipation and electricity. That's what keeps things alive and what keeps you in the moment. I think the minute it becomes dead and you think, oh, this is easy, whatever, I'm just going to get through the show, everything's lost. Yeah. And so I think it's definitely a good thing to have that.
Absolutely. I'm going to take you back for question number two. I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember hearing, please, that had an emotional impact on you.
Yeah, so it was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but the Eva Cassidy version. Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. I mean, even if I didn't even have any emotional attachment to the song, as soon as that starts, you're gone. And I love Eva Cassidy's voice. I think in the same way that Judy Garland's does, it has like such a raw emotion in it, and it tells such a story. They're not just sort of singing the song; they're like embodying and becoming more than the song. But we used it for my nan's funeral. She died quite young; she was about 62, and I was 10, and we were extremely close to her. She lived around the corner from us, and just the most wonderful, amazing woman in the world. And so it really hit us hard when we lost her, and especially my mum. It was my mum's mum, and for a long, long time my mum could never hear that song again without sort of bursting into tears, and same for a lot of us. But I think we've got to a place now where it's a really lovely thing to hear that song. It's not so raw anymore, and the emotion now has become a nostalgia and a remembering. It's a chance to remember my nan and remember all the amazing things about her, and it always seems to find a way into our lives. Like, it'll just randomly come on. And we were in Anglesey. I was in Anglesey with my family recently, and me and my mom went into this random little shop, like, I don't know, like a little souvenir kind of shop. No one was in there. It was deadly silent, just like one woman sort of flicking through a magazine. And she just popped on some music. And of course, it was Eva Cassidy, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So it's just nice little things like I sort of see of signs from my nan.
Yeah.
Also, that song in general, I think, means a lot to me because Wizard of Oz is the first sort of film I remember watching. I must have been like 3 years old. And I thought it was going to be boring. It was black and white. I didn't want to watch it. And then the minute it turned to color, like my mind was blown.
Yeah.
And then that was the first part I ever did, actually. I played Mayor of the Munchkin City when I was about five at our local dance school. So, yeah, I think that song holds a lot of importance to me, yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful record. And I think do you know the sort of story behind the Eva Cassidy version?
I'm not sure if I do.
Because it kind of was a happy accident. So, unfortunately, she passed before she had any success as such.
Which is crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
And somebody found that footage of her singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow in the bar.
It was like a live, recording?
In a coffee
bar
shop.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was, I think Steve Wright played it on like one of the sort of Top of the Pops 2 retro shows and as his player, and no one had ever sort of seen it, and I think the response to it was just like phenomenal. It's like, what the fuck is this version? It's incredible because it's so understated and gentle, and then that last bit where she just soars, it's like literally got goosebumps just popped up on my arm. It's like it's so powerful, and it's such a shame that the Songbird album went on to sell millions and she never got to you know get the merits of her success, which is such a shame. But it's such a beautiful record, and you're the first person that's in 500 episodes of this has ever chose that, and I can't believe no one's ever chose that before, because it is
I was sure that was going to be like such a popular one.
It's such a beauty. So where was growing up for you? Was growing up in Dartford?
No, I'm from the north, so a little town called Lytham, near Blackpool on the northwest coast. I grew up, my parents are sort of lived there all their lives, and my sister now has a house around the corner from them. They're very much all still there, and I try and go back as much as possible. I love home, and I love the north, and I just love like being outdoors, because we're not too far from the Lake District. And we growing up, we spent so much time there as kids with the dogs and like with friends and family, just running around the hills and in like jumping into freezing cold lakes and all of that stuff. We've always been very kind of connected to nature and stuff like that. And living in Lytham as well, it's like got such a great community. Everyone kind of knows everyone. It's a very beautiful little town. It's by the sea, like the village green. We've got a windmill, all that sort of thing. So I love, any chance I can, I try and go home,
Oh, so you've clearly got super sort of fond memories of growing up there then.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe at some point in my life, I can definitely see myself like moving back there.
Yeah.
I think everywhere I go in Lytham, there's some place that I have a story or a connection to, like my nan's house, our house, my primary school, high school, the first little theatre school that I joined, Lowther Gardens, is a little theatre in Lytham. Just everywhere has such special memories that I can definitely see myself coming back there one day.
Yeah, it's so strange. I've like I turned 50 a few weekends ago, and it got to the point now where, you know, as soon as you were saying jumping in freezing lakes, and I bought myself a camper van for my 50th because I've spent so long driving to the lakes and swimming in the lakes, and it's like I just am edging closer and closer to retire and to get up there because it's the most beautiful place. I say it to so many people, if we could guarantee, regular sunshine, you'd never leave the UK. It's so beautiful. There's so many beautiful, stunning places.
Yeah, honestly. Like I said, I was just in Anglesey with my family, and the scenery was unreal. And like filming Outlander in Scotland, the locations, just like that rugged Scottish coastlines and locks and everything. It's just so stunning. And I absolutely love Ireland and the Lake District. Like you said, there's so much to explore in the UK and so many gems. My parents love going to Northumberland as well. I've actually never been, but again, just the coastlines are just stunning.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to do as much of the UK as possible. Me and my mate actually did a couple of years ago, we did the Dales Way. We did a sort of 5-day hike with everything on our backs. And I was like very unprepared. He had all his lightweight stuff. He was like good to go. He'd measured out his porridge oats like to the last gram. I turn up, I've got a 3-man tent in my backpack. I've got like
5 pot noodles.
Yeah, exactly, in it, yeah. I was like, yeah. And he was like, mate, what the hell are you doing? Anyway, we got through it. I lost 3 toenails, but it was amazing. I loved it.
Wonderful. Well, you, when you were sort of reminiscing about your hometown, you mentioned school and stuff, so let's move on to track 3, and I'm gonna ask you to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Joey.
Yeah, so this was a tough one because I was like, I'm not sure like what sort of era of school I was going to go for, but the one that I just keep coming back to and still play now is Play Your Part, Part 1, Feed the Animals, the album Feed the Animals by Girl Talk.
Yeah,
it's just such, that just has such amazing memories for me. That was sort of like sixth form time, like where we should have been revising, but we were just in my mate Nick's garden drinking and in a paddling pool and just like living our best lives. Like at that age, you kind of don't have any real problems, and it's just yeah. You're just hanging out with your mates and seeing your mates every day. And I love like hip hop and rap and all of that, and I just think he's a genius, Girl Talk. I think yeah. The way that he mixes different genres and the whole album is just has such a through line. It just is you can just play it continually. And so yeah, that's the song that really takes me back to school.
Did you enjoy school?
I did really. I loved school. It's weird, I kind of...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've had like 2 separate lives. Like my like acting was very much outside of school. I never like acted at school. I did drama, and I had 2 amazing drama teachers at high school. But I tended to keep it separate. So school for me was more about the sort of social aspect and like going out and just being with your mates and stuff like that. And I was quite lucky in the fact that I've got quite a good memory. So I always did all right in my exams, even though I didn't really work as hard as I should have done, which yeah. like infuriated my sister. She worked so hard. And I was like, I sort of was just having a laugh really at school. But yeah, I sort of kept that very sort of separate from school. Yeah.
Was there any sort of ever a question as to what you wanted to do when you left school, or was acting, you know, always sort of paramount into, you know, into your plans?
Yeah, not really for me. I mean, I've wanted to be an actor since I was like 4 years old, which is quite strange, I think, because like my family had nothing to do with the industry at all. Kind of came out of nowhere. I just started because my sister did it for fun. I wanted to do everything she did, and then I just was obsessed with it. And I think my parents very much saw it as like something that I loved and something that I was good at, but I always had to stay at school and do my exams and things. So I worked as a kid. I worked as an actor as a kid, which again, I think my parents found quite baffling and were just sort of like, yeah, okay. And I got like an agent and stuff, which they didn't really understand. And I didn't really understand, but yeah, it's definitely something I've always wanted to do. And my first professional job, I was 13. I did Billy Elliot, the musical. And that, I think that was the real turning point for me and for my parents to be like, oh wait, this could actually be a career.
Yeah.
Rather than just something that I like love doing. You could actually, this could take you further as a career. So that's when I started to take it a little bit more seriously. Yeah.
Is the reason I set this podcast up many years ago was talking about people's journeys and location. And the kind of idea for it come from a friend of mine who lives over near me, who's an actor and a musician. And he was always asked, like, you know, oh, do you in London? He's like, no, I'm in Essex. Oh, really? Why have you not moved to London? He's like, well, I quite like Essex and it's not far from London. Did it feel for you to pursue, you know, your career more seriously that you had to leave the north and relocate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously for Billy, I had to move, and that was such a young age. I was 13 and we all moved into this big house together, and we had a house mother, and we were just these like random northern kids that had never done anything before in their lives, and we were just like absolute tearaways. Like, it got to the point when like every teacher in London refused to teach us because we were just like out of control, unruly, but having the time of our lives. And I think that's when I really saw London as like the kind of hub of everything, theatre and all of that. But then when I went home after that, I was lucky to, I did a lot of work in the north, like the TV things that I did, like a Jimmy McGovern series called Accused, was incredible, because it's like I got to work with amazing actors with and in the north. And I think there's so much talent in the north that was lucky. I wasn't too sort of disturbed in my sort of school years. But then finishing school, I knew that I wanted to go to drama school, and I knew that to go to drama school, like the best ones that I'd sort of been researching at the time were in London. And I think for me, I was like, yeah, I've got to go to drama school in London. So then I went to drama school, and then that sort of became my new network. That was all my friends, and we were all kind of trying to make it together after leaving drama school and doing shitty little jobs and stuff like that, living in absolute shitholes, like, but like having a great time. And I think I ended up just staying in London because it was, I guess, easier for auditions and things. Before COVID, you would go in a lot more, whereas now I think you could be based anywhere. A lot of things are over Zoom, or you do a self-tape and stuff like that. And a lot of my friends are moving out of London, and some of them are moving to the Lake District or the Peak District, or a lot of them have moved to Glasgow and stuff like that. So I definitely think now London isn't so much, it doesn't have so much importance on your career. I guess for drama school, if you want to go to drama school, there are brilliant drama schools everywhere, but there's really good ones in London. So I guess it's just a personal thing now where you want to be based. And I think your priorities change as you get older as well. Don't have to always be in London all the time. And it's nice to get out of London. Like, I love London, but like I said, like, I'm very much like a country boy. Oh, I need to be like near water. So yeah, I think for now I'm going to stay around London, just because it's where my friends are and where my like network is. But yeah, I can see myself moving back up north, I think.
Jumping in the Thames ain't quite the same as Windermere, is it?
Not quite. No, I wouldn't want to risk it.
I mean, you talk about sort of, you know, relocating at 13 to, you know, live in a house with other youngsters and such. I mean, as much as that's, you know, sounds super fun, that's also a big move at such a young age. Was you a confident young man?
Yeah, I think I was. I think I'm less confident now that I'm older. I think the world's kind of knocked that out of me a little bit. But I think I was. I think I just saw it as like an adventure, and it was just fun. And I think we were so busy as kids. We were in Billy. We, like, each morning we would have school for half the day. Then we would go and do like a dance class, like a street dance class or something like that. Then we might have to do extra rehearsals. And then if you weren't on that night, you would be in the dressing room anyway, just in case something happened to one of the other boys. So we were so busy. I kind of didn't have time to think of how huge it was and to miss home. Obviously we all did, but I think I'm more kind of sentimental now than I was as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me the first song you remember buying.
So the first song I remember buying, it was actually an album. It was International Super Hits, Green Day. And I remember really clearly buying it with my own money. It was my birthday money. And I went to HMV to buy it.
Yeah.
And the song in particular I would pick is Basket Case, because that's the one that I would just play over and over again. Yeah. And that was very much like, at that time, I think I must have been about 9. And me and my mates were kind of in our sort of skating phase, and we'd all have like the baggy jeans and the big Vans and the chains, and we'd go to a little, it was like a ramp park, skate park called Ramp City, and my dad would build little ramps for me in the back street, and I'd skate and blade and stuff like that. So that was, yeah, that I really remember that stage of my life, and Green Day kind of being the soundtrack to yeah. that part of my life. Yeah.
Oh, it's an absolute banger of a record.
Yeah.
I asked you about confidence a moment ago, and one of the other things that you can be super confident in the creative industry, but I think another really important factor is you know, it comes with so many knocks, you know, in any creative field. Tell me about your relationship with drive and how driven you are.
Yeah. I think that confidence as well is almost sort of like a fearlessness. I think I definitely had a fearlessness as a child. And also there was no pressure on me to get a job. Like, you know, my parents were never pushy. They never wanted to push me into any kind of career. So for me, I kind of just did it because I loved it and I thought I was quite good at it. But I always knew I definitely had drive from being a very, very young age. I like acting and performing was always at the forefront of my mind. And I would go to a class on a Thursday and all day on a Saturday. And I do other little workshops and things. And my dad is amazing at accents for some reason. He's absolutely not an actor, although I think he probably fancies himself as one. But so I would always mess around with accents with him and watch films and just take in as much as I could. And I think I've always had a strong work ethic for acting, and I've always taken it very seriously. And I remember as I got older, seeing older actors maybe kind of complain about things and being in the green room and slagging off this and that, and, oh, we've got to work 12 hours today. And I remember just being so confused, being like, but what do you mean? It's like, it's the best. Yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So so happy to be here 12 hours a day. And I mean, of course, I don't feel like that all the time now. Like it, some days very much are work, and it is hard work, and it is long hours. But I think I've always been very determined, from being a young age. And I kind of, it definitely wasn't a cockiness, but I kind of just knew that I was going to go to drama school and I was going to get in, and that was going to be a stepping stone. And I think that's after leaving drama school, that's when I was like shaken a little bit, because you start to see more of that rejection and more of the hardships that come with acting and the competition and the, yeah, just like being beaten down and trying to carry on. But even when I've been at my lowest, it's never crossed my mind to give up.
Yeah.
And I would do anything to pay my rent. I've done all the shittest jobs you can imagine. Like, and I've worked in gyms and bars, and like I worked for a babywear company. I did kids' parties, which was like truly the lowest point of my life. I can't even tell you. But throughout it all, I've always had the goal, and I knew that I still hope now that if you just stick it out, hopefully, yeah, you know, you'll be all right. Yeah.
It's so weird. You done something so English a moment ago. You went, and I thought I was quite good at it. Didn't just go, and I knew I was good at it. And like, no. Because why is it as English people, we always kind of dumb it down and kind of sort of like take a bit away from it, like, well, you know, I can't say I'm good at something. We're not allowed to do that. And it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. You should be super proud of what you've done. You should be able to go, yeah, well, I was good at it, so that's why I thought I would do it. No, I was quite good at it.
Yeah. I just can't, the thought of that. Like,
it's crazy, like, though. Oh, wonderful. Well, look, let's go clubbing. And for track five, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that soundtracked your years clubbing, Joey.
Yes. So I started clubbing probably younger than I should. I literally just turned 16 the first time I went out. And I just like loved it. I went so much with my friends. We'd go like every Thursday and Saturday. And that carried on like all the way through my 20s and stuff. And I think my clubbing days are kind of behind me now, but I don't know. We'll see. Never say never. But the song that just really defines like my clubbing days to me is Low, Flo Rida featuring T-Pain.
Yeah.
I think it is just so iconic. And I just revert back to being a 17-year-old, like throwing myself around, like sweating on a light up sticky dance floor in Blackpool. Yeah. I just think, yeah, and like I could be at a party or anywhere now, and that comes on, and then that's it. I'm straight on the dance floor.
you said you was going clubbing, you know, at 16. Doing what you was doing at sort of 13, did you feel that you grew up quite quickly then?
Yeah, I think so. I think the adults kind of treated us as adults as well in Billy, and I think... But which was good in a way, because there was a mutual respect. They never like talked down to us or anything. And I think living away from your parents and doing like a job every single day at such a young age, I think does make you grow up quite a lot. And I think just us as kids, I remember just feeling like I was so much older than I was, like at 14. You know, if I look at 14-year-olds now, I'm like, you're a child, like you can't be doing stuff like that. And if I think about the stuff that I was getting up to when I was younger, I'm just like, no, you were such a little kid, like you had no idea what you were doing. But I so remember feeling like very adult and very in control of myself. Yeah, but I think the real time I actually grew up was definitely drama school. That's when I really like pulled myself together and you know, learned to take care of myself and to take things properly. Like, don't get me wrong, I still had fun and went out and stuff like all the time at drama school, but that was the real turning point for me where I feel like I grew into myself and grew up.
Yeah. Take you home now for track six.
Yeah.
Favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
So this one is We All Lose by a group called Monroe, and they're a trio of girls, Becky, Jodie and Stacey. And Becky is a very special person to me. She's one of my best friends. We met when I was 10 and we acted together and everything. And we've kind of been through everything two people go through together. And we were like sort of each other's first loves and all of that. And she's very much a part of my family. She's been there for every good thing that's ever happened, every bad thing that's ever happened. Becky's always there. And she's an amazing actor. And then she's just decided to, in the past few years, she's made this group, Monroe, with her two friends. And they're all so talented. And to be able to watch their journey as a group, and they've grown so much as vocalists, and they're writing now, they've co-written this and producing, and they just work so hard. And I think, you know, this song in particular, this is their first single. And I've been able to witness it from its sort of infancy, from like little voice notes that Becky would send me, or clips of, you know, sessions that they were doing, and bits of lyrics and all stuff like that. To see all their hard work now come into a single is amazing. And I think it's so important to support your friends' work, and also to champion like Northern talent. They're all Northern girls, and there's so much talent up North. And I think it's so difficult now to bring a single out. There's so much, like, I can't remember the stat, but however many new songs get put on Spotify every
day. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And like you were saying, it's like a TikTok earworm thing. And if it's not that, then it sort of gets forgotten. Mm. It's such a shame, because when you see how much work goes into something, like you really want to see it flourish and get the recognition that it deserves. So yeah, I picked this one because obviously the group and especially Becky mean a lot to me, and they're from my home county. And yeah, it's just nice to see talent from the North.
Wonderful. What a perfect choice. Championing your friends. Love it. So this is your last track, and you get to be a tastemaker or influencer, I think the kids call it. And this is a song that you think many people may not know, Joey, that you would like them to hear, please.
Yeah, so I've picked The Lobster, which is by a group called The Gloaming, and it's their third album, The Gloaming 3. And they're a sort of Irish-American kind of super group. I just think their music is absolutely beautiful. It's it feels quite sort of magical, and it's very haunting, and it's like with a lot with like traditional sort of Irish music. I mean, I love Irish music, and I love Irish people and Ireland, but I think especially the music, it just has a way of just taking over your whole body and transforming you to Ireland. You can fully see their history and feel the sort of pain and the glory in all of it. And I think especially with this song, it starts so beautifully and gently, and like the fiddle is just so pure. And then it really takes you on a journey right towards the end. It becomes sort of wild. And it really reminds me of the scene in Titanic when like Jack and Rose are holding hands and they're spinning around and everyone's around them and the world's just kind of wildly flying around them. And it's like just on the edge of being out of control. And that's what this song feels at the end, but it feels so charged. And I just feel like you go on a real journey throughout that song. And it's a song that I always come back to, no matter kind of what mood I'm in. I feel like it's a good resetter.
Yeah.
It's like a palate cleanser from the world, you know, that sort of song. And I think they're all their albums, I'd love people to explore their music, because it's so special. Yeah.
And so is it made up of Irish and American artists?
Yes. Yeah. And I think they're all sort of, you know, artists in their own right. Super, super talented. And they've all come together. I think, can't remember what year they formed, but yeah, they've come together and they sing, you know, in Irish and English and Gaelic and all of that sort of stuff. And yeah, there's like fiddles and all Irish instruments and stuff. So yeah, they're really an incredible group. I'd love to see them live. I've never seen them live, but I think that would be a real experience.
Well, we make it very easy for the listeners of the podcast to go and check that out, because we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this episode with all of the tracks that you've picked on there. So,
so
people can go and check them out and check out Monroe as well. And let's get back to you, Joey. What's happening with you? Tell us about where you're at the moment. What's happening?
Yeah, so we've just, a couple of months ago, we wrapped on season 7 of Outlander. And now sort of begins the sort of press part of it. It's being released on the 16th of June. They're splitting it into two parts because this is like a super-sized season. It's 16 episodes. So the first 8 episodes will come out on June 16th, and then the next 8 come out next month. But in a couple of weeks, we are going to New York we're having the premiere of season 7 at the Tribeca Film Festival. So I'm so excited for that. I just love New York. It's one of my favorite places in the world. And so to be able to go there with work and celebrate this thing that everyone's worked so hard on, it's sort of a year's filming. I'm so proud of everyone. And I think like the crew and the cast have been so amazingly welcoming to me. This is my first season. And it's slightly daunting, you know, joining such a already well-established huge show, not sort of knowing what to expect, where you'll kind of fit in. But from like the moment I stepped on set, I felt such a part of it. And it's going to be amazing now to see all of that come together. And the response on like social media from all the fans has been amazing. So I'm so excited to see their reactions to like my character and the storyline. And it's a huge, huge season. It's like, it's very, very epic. We've seen a bit, they showed us a sort of like 3-minute highlight reel of it at the wrap party and also at Christmas. And like, I literally just had goosebumps. It looks like amazing. A blockbuster. Like, yeah, it looks amazing. So I'm just excited for everyone to see that and to see how it's received. Yeah.
Wonderful. And if people want to keep up to speed with every sort of project that you find yourself involved in, Joey, where's the best place to do that?
I guess probably just like my Instagram and my Twitter. I'm going to start putting things out on there now, which is just Joey Phil, PHILLL underscore. And then I think my Twitter is at Joey Phillips. I'm terrible at Twitter. I need to get better. I promise I'll get better in time. But yeah, that's kind of probably the best ways to keep up with things, I think.
Wonderful. Well, if it's cool with you, then we'll tag you on that when this episode comes out. So if people haven't found you already, they can do so. Joey, it's been an absolute delight talking records with you, mate. It's been so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you so much. I've had so much fun. It's been great. Thank you, mate.
Oh, wonderful. I'm going to press stop. Don't go anywhere.
All right.
Oh, Joey Phillips, what an absolutely lovely man. Loved that chat. Super kind guy. Chose some cracking records, and I managed to get a little bit of wild swimming chat in as well. Imagine that, growing up near the Lake District. Oh, that is the stuff of dreams. I'm off to meet Joey now on the Thurrock Bridge, and we're going to have a little swim up the Thames. If you see us, give us a wave. Right, I'm back next time. In the meantime, go check out the back catalogue, subscribe, give us a follow on the socials, like, love, share, retweet. You know what to do. And if you want to support the podcast even more, then please have a little look over on the Patreon. Everything I've just said about, you can find at your one-stop shop, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. In the meantime, be nice to each other. Bye-bye.